Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis.
How are you there, Mark?
Aces.
It's evidently Stage Left in the news, or the Restaurant Guys in the news this week. We were in the Star Ledger on Wednesday in an article about small plates where you were quoted. You sounded very intelligent, and I would like to congratulate them on their editing to get you there.
I can sound intelligent in very, very small little bits.
And today on the AP Wire out there, I know we talk about this subject often, but there's a, or we have in the past, we've sort of left it alone for a while, but there's a new development in the whole move to ban foie gras in the state of New Jersey, and this is very, very important, and it has national implications, which is why the AP called us, among other people. In addition to the bill that was introduced last month to prohibit the production of foie gras in New Jersey, which was sort of a moral blow, if it were to pass, which I don't think it will, there was a bill introduced by Assemblyman Panter to prohibit the distribution or sale of foie gras in the state of New Jersey. So it would have to come out of all the restaurants that have it. And the problem is D'Artagnan, which is a company owned by a woman named Ariane Dagan, who's a friend of ours, is the preeminent producer or supplier of foie gras in the country, and they're in New Jersey. Right. So if this bill goes through, she's out of business.
Well, you guys have heard us talk about foie gras as far as the moral implications. You know our position on foie gras and that we think that it is a humane way to raise meat.
It's not cruelty to animals.
We don't need to get into the exactly how we do it and why it's so good and all those things. This is a bigger issue, I think, than do we think it's even cruelty to animals or not. The issue here is pretty much basic rights. Are animal rights greater than human rights?
Honestly, Mark, I think that if this was true cruelty to animals and they were to prohibit the sale of animals that were produced cruelly, but look, your Tyson chicken is treated much more cruelly than your foie gras duck. And here you have legislation introduced by Assemblyman Panter, who's a vegetarian, by the way. Isn't it? So look, here's what they're trying to do, people. They're trying to take away your freedom of choice. And there are very few people who eat foie gras, so that's who they're going after first. And this vegetarian is going to try and take the meats off your plate one at a time until you're all eating tofu, and that's what you can have left. Low cholesterol, skim milk, and tofu.
Well, that's what I mean when I say a bigger issue. I think that the fact that there's a vegetarian putting this bill on the table because he's trying to remove meat from our diets, it's just inappropriate for a politician to be mixing his beliefs that you should be a vegetarian with our beliefs that you shouldn't be.
And you know what they say? Oh, it's just we're going after foie gras because it's cruelty to animals. That's not true. If they were going after what was cruelest, they'd go after some other animal first.
Like the pig farms. I mean, you've heard us talk about pig farms. You've heard us talk about chicken farms. Some of the cattle ranches.
Assemblyman Michael Panter will introduce a bill next week that would take foie gras off of all New Jersey menus and take this New Jersey company based in Newark, New Jersey, owned by Ariane Dagan, called D'Artagnan. Either drive them out of New Jersey or drive them out of business.
You know what, though? And Ariane Dagan is a friend of ours, okay? But if I believed Ariane Dagan was doing something that was immoral or that was wrong, I wouldn't care about the 120 jobs. I wouldn't care about the 120 jobs.
It's not about money.
I'd say, listen, Ariane, you can't continue to do this and be cruel to these animals and operate your farm in this way. The way we operate chicken farms, for instance. If Ariane was raising her farm the way we operate chicken farms, right, I'd say, Ariane, that's wrong, you shouldn't do it, and I would stop buying from her. Right. The way our restaurants have stopped buying from the big agribusiness chicken farms. But she's not doing that. Okay? She's raising her animals in the right way.
On a farm.
On a farm.
In a pen.
in a pen where the animals can go outside and they don't peck at each other because they're in such close quarters that they make each other crazy.
Well, we have an ally. Anthony Bourdain was also quoted in this article. Hey, we're an article with Anthony Bourdain. Isn't that cool? He lives in a nicer house than we do. Anthony Bourdain is celebrity chef and author. Yeah, of course.
Hold on. He lives in a nicer house than we do this week.
Yeah. Said the ban on foie gras would be a bomb dropped in the New York restaurant scene. And I love this quote. Bourdain says, "Foie gras is a primary color in the flavor spectrum that we use in the kitchen. It simply goes back to Roman times. To ask chefs to cook without it is like asking a painter not to use the color blue." I love Anthony Bourdain. He's the best. And my final quote, and then we're going to leave this alone, is...
we're not going to leave it alone. We're going to talk about it some more, and we're going to bash these people
Well, we're having dinner with Ariane DeGan tonight, and we're going to meet with the New Jersey Restaurant Association.
And we're going to talk about how to bash these people some more.
And we're going to talk about how to win
well,
this
the
thing.
Chicago... I mean, one of the things that you've left out of this conversation is Chicago has banned foie gras.
But they've introduced legislation to repeal
and
the ban.
And now they've introduced legislation to unban it, because people started realizing that the implications of banning foie gras are not nearly the same as what's going on on our chicken farms.
This is one of those issues where you need to be smarter, because it's counterintuitive. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at it and you say, oh, that's animal cruelty. It's not animal cruelty. My favorite, though, is where this vegetarian assemblyman Michael Panter is quoted as saying, finance and economics should not take precedent over protecting living things, right? He's a vegetarian, mm-hmm. Okay? He believes in protecting all living things, as in no meat, no hamburgers for you. But I love his final quote, as he said, "I consider this blood money." I'm like, I consider it blood sausage. You know? Of course it's blood money. If you believe you can kill animals, then for food, then that's okay. And the other article we were mentioning was the Star Ledger, just to pat ourselves on the back, was a very interesting article by
Sharon... Actually, that's you patting us on the back. I'm just kind of listening.
Yes, but you allowed it to happen. wrote a very interesting article on small plates.
I can't stop you. Just prattle on. There's no stopping you.
She wrote a very interesting article on small plates, tapas from Spain, meze from Middle Eastern food, mm-hmm. and it's a great article. You can pick it up at thestarledger.com. But one of the things she talks about is she ties in how in French restaurants and American restaurants, we have tasting menus now, which are often an option where you can go in and just have the 7-course tasting menu. And there are 7 smaller courses that should add up to about the same amount of food as if you went and had an appetizer, an entree, and dessert.
And lots of great restaurants are doing them. And what the article suggests, and frankly what Francis and I suggest, is when you go to a great restaurant, it's a great opportunity to taste a lot of different flavors, a lot of different foods. And you know what? If there's something on that tasting menu that you're not crazy about, big deal. There's 6 other courses.
Yeah, and you can even say, you know, can we not get this one thing? We recommend that if you're going to a restaurant you like and you want to experience everything and be open-minded, I think that's absolutely the way to go. We're going to be talking in just a moment with a woman who wrote a book about a phenomenon which was known as the Freshman 15. So for freshman girls who go to college and often come home at Thanksgiving 10 or 15 pounds heavier.
Sometimes boys.
We have some good advice from Robin Flips. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys, from Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, in the college town of Rutgers University, New Brunswick, New Jersey. In Fighting the Freshman 15, Robin Flips warns us about the danger of overeating, overdrinking, and underdoing when one should enter college. The book is meant to serve as a roadmap for girls entering their freshman year in college and explains why the Freshman 15 is so common and how to prevent it.
Robin, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So, Robin, we entered college, I guess about 20 years ago now, and we did the Freshman 40. You don't know the book for guys?
Well, yes, actually boys can definitely be victims of the weight gain at college, and they can gain some big numbers, as you say. They do it much differently than girls, but nonetheless it's a health risk, and it's something that's preventable. And I'm sure today, in the 20 years since you were in school, even young men feel a lot more self-conscious about that weight than they might have in the past.
You know what's funny is when you talk about body images and the like, I was talking to a friend of ours who's a restaurant critic and a wine writer, a guy named Anthony Giglio, and we were talking about growing up in Lyndhurst, where he grew up. And he said, you know, back then I would wear like a half T-shirt. And I said, a half T-shirt? And, you know, were you ripped enough to wear a half T-shirt? He's like, no, nobody was ripped back in 1985. We're all pudgy, but everybody was pudgy, so you wore a half T-shirt. Uh-huh. Are the body images of men and women changed? Or is there more emphasis being placed on that now for women, or is it pretty much the same for women?
Oh, I think it has definitely accelerated. Women have always been objectified or, you know, viewed as sort of, I always say, knick-knack, something that's supposed to be admired and appreciated for its appearance. And the pressure has only increased when it comes to unrealistic expectations about size and shape and the drastic means that some girls go to and that at a younger and younger age to try to meet these media-hyped images of what girls and women should look like. But boys and men are now also getting caught up in this, which...
Thank God I missed that.
Yeah, it led to healthy behavior. We say, thank goodness. But unfortunately, it leads to a lot of very extreme behavior, both in the dieting and in the exercise components that can do sometimes much more harm than good.
So Robin, in your book, you talk about the types of people who you should avoid in order to avoid this freshman 15. Well, I was talking to my wife this morning, talking about the interview and everything today, and we met in college. Mm-hmm. And she said, yeah, you know, when I came to college, I actually lost weight. I started really exercising. I did great. And then I met this guy in around October. I gained 20 pounds really fast. I was the guy you were supposed to avoid when you're in college.
Why don't you give some people the very good advice on how to avoid people like us? What to look for? What are the warning signs that you might be dating a restaurant guy, a future restaurant guy?
You're probably in a better position to describe how...
Yeah, but I'm not giving away my secrets. Why don't you tell us what you got from the book?
Actually, any number of people can become saboteurs, which is one of the chapters in the book, and it can be your roommate, it can be the people who live on your dorm floor,
your boyfriend.
Obviously the boyfriend. But there's that group mentality and the sharing of every emotional upset. So if one person does poorly on an exam, everyone's going to have pizza. Or if one person's heart gets broken by, you know, the fellow that they're seeing, then everybody's going to go out for ice cream. It just is a lot of shared or communal eating. And when you are a freshman, you are trying to make new friends. You have left all your high school buddies behind, and you certainly don't want to be the odd one out who says, oh, no, thanks, I'm going to stay back and
I'm going to have my celery stick.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So there is a lot of pressure to just kind of go along and participate in things that you may never have done at home because you lived in your family house where you didn't have this constant exposure to other kids your age who are going through their own personal trauma.
You know, you bring up in the book, that's related to another point that you bring up in the book. The freshman 15 is more of a problem now than it has been historically. How's college life changed to worsen the situation?
Well, I describe in the beginning of the book how the kind of liberties that were won in the 60s and 70s, which is when I was going to college in the 70s, actually just provided a lot more time for students to be off campus or to have access to food 24 hours a day because they didn't have the, I don't know what they used to call them, but those dorm adults who would lock the doors.
Proctors,
you know,
and curfews and...
They were the surrogate parents, I guess.
Yeah.
And so there were curfews. There was not 24-hour access to on-campus eateries and coffee shops and fast food.
I don't know if you know what we call the trucks that would park outside of our dorms at Rutgers. They're still called this, but they would park on the street outside of the dorms all night long so that you could just, if you wanted to, you could go to the... It's called here in New Jersey the grease truck to get some food.
And for those kids
with good reason, by the way.
For anybody who's younger who might be listening to this show, the grease trucks are kind of all in one place right now. They were all up and down the road, so no matter what dorm you lived in, there was a grease truck out
in
front of your dorm.
You were no more than 100 paces from a gyro at any given moment. Hey, when we come back, we're going to be talking more with Robin Phillips about her book, The Freshman 15. That's a common malady to avoid around this time of year. If you're a young person who's just come to Rutgers and you're in the listening area, or if you're sending someone off to college, it's a book that you might want to send them. There's a lot of good advice in it. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys Radio Show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys. We're talking with Robin Flips. Her book is Fighting the Freshman 15, a college woman's guide to getting real about food and keeping the pounds off.
You know, Robin, one of the things you talk about in the book is that, you know, there are certain things you can do in order to not set yourself up for failure here. And one of the things you talk about is making sure you're well-rested. Isn't that kind of antithetical to the whole college things? I remember in reading in one of my psychology books, maybe freshman or sophomore year, and one of the things it said is that people are more prone to heart disease if they sleep fewer than 6 hours or more than 10 hours. Mm. And what I thought was, well, I'm in college. I do either one of those things every day.
So how important is getting is rest and that sort of thing too? I mean, what can kids actually really do and still embrace college life and the fun part of college life?
Well, I guess they can do all of it, but in moderation. I do believe that most of what gets young people in trouble, both with the eating and the lack of sleep and the over-drinking, is the excess of it. And that all comes back to one of the early premises I make in the book, which is the freedom is just unbelievably dangerous when you go from all of the supervision you have in high school and living at home. And even if your parents were kind of loose, you still had to check in every so often. You still had to sleep in your own bed once in a while and show up for a meal at the table with your family. And when you get to college, there is absolutely no one who gives a hoot whether you ever come home at night, whether you ever sleep in your own bed, and whether you ever sit down for a meal. There is a complete absence of any kind of supervision. It's almost like a world within society, because the police don't mess with the campuses too much. There are obviously campus security personnel, but if you're drinking in your room or at a frat house, and if you're binging, and if you're staying out all night, there isn't anyone who's going to shake you awake and tell you to get back to your own room. So they have this unbridled freedom, and they use or abuse it. It's
well,
just too excess.
And I think that the idea is to learn how to handle that freedom.
Yes.
And I think this is a very good idea, because, I mean, people want to embrace that freedom. And you know what? On the one night this month or this week that you do want to stay out all night, that's good that you're able to do that. But then you've got to balance it with putting the whole life in balance. And I guess that's what becoming a young adult is all about. And
it's a place to learn your limitations.
And this is a great guide for that. The book is Fighting the Freshman 15, A College Woman Guide to Getting Real About Food and Keeping the Pounds Off. We'll be talking more with the author, Robin Flips, after the news. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1130.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
In the book Fighting the Freshman 15, Robin Flips warns us about the dangers of overeating, overdrinking, and underdoing when one enters college. The book's meant to serve as a roadmap for girls entering their freshman year in college, and explains why the freshman 15 is so common and how to prevent it. Robin?
Yes.
Dining hall, friend or foe?
Actually, today, a friend. I would have to say it wasn't always, but the complaints have been heard around the country, and there are so many options that if you're a vegetarian, no problem. If you want to eat salad bar every day, every meal, no problem. If you have any kind of special branded foods that you prefer, they have the fat-free this and the, you know, lower fat that.
What if you want to eat steakums with the gooey cheese stuff on
still
top?
Can do.
Or
still
fried
can do.
Chicken patty
you know what
product.
You know what I recall about resenting about the college cafeteria when we were in college for our commons?
When they'd run out of Fruit Loops?
Was when we'd have Fruit Loops for dinner because that was the only thing edible that day. Or what I resent is we'd have the cheese fries or the steakums and cheese fries, and I think, you know, God, I'm gaining so much weight, and this doesn't even taste good.
And it tastes terrible.
Right. If I was eating something that I loved and was gaining all that weight, it would seem to be worth it. But the college dorm is the college cafeteria has healthy options for you?
Oh, yes. And
do people take them, or is it like fast food joints that have a salad and nobody orders it?
I think there are a percentage of students who definitely take advantage of them, and then there are a lot of students who have never gone that way, and they're certainly not going to start in college caring about whether the vegetables are steamed or whether they always have the chance to have something, again, meatless or prepared without so much fat and oil.
Okay.
But I need to comment. I don't think your weight gain at college was probably as much due to those steakums and cheese fries as the amount of beer.
As the 37 beers a day?
Yeah,
that's probably, you're probably right on
and
that.
And I
way.
Wasn't the guy drinking light beer either, in case you're wondering.
But, so that's food in the cafeteria. You also deal with in your book about food in the dormitory. Food in the dormitory, friend or foe, and what are the guidelines?
Well, the dormitory doesn't have enough facilities for you to do a lot of elaborate shopping and cooking, so with a little refrigerator and, you know, whatever space you're usually storing things that don't rot or you know, are highly non-perishable. And
jelly.
And snack food. And many times those are the things you're reaching for when you are in the room bored or bummed out or having a bad day or your roommate's having a bad day, and you nosh on them mindlessly because it's emotional feeding. You're using that food to just try to feel better or try to perk yourself up. And typically students aren't bringing back the baby carrots.
Are there good things people can bring back to have there in case, like the popcorn instead of the,
Sure. Oh, sure. In fact, even the recipes that I provide in the back of the book are based on things you can sort of smuggle out of the cafeteria. If you have a meal card and you're entitled to go there and get food, there's no one to stop you from taking boxed cereal or packets of oatmeal or containers of yogurt back to your dorm room and eating it later when you are going to be hungry and you want something more nutritious and less caloric to rely on.
Well, I think it's in the dorm rooms, it's kind of a microcosm of some of the same problems we have in our country right now. And that is, if we're looking for something fast, if we're looking for something that convenient, that we don't need to shop for every 2 or 3 days,
mm-hmm.
then what's that going to be? It's going to be some kind of processed food mm-hmm. that's probably laden with corn syrup, laden with a lot of calories in a very small package. And those are the types of foods that are easiest for us to store and to keep in that kind of an atmosphere. And so one of the things that is in your book that I loved was you're encouraging college students to go food shopping more often than they do.
Yes, and I think they, again, they have some options to do that because there's little co-ops now and there are shops that, even convenience stores that carry bananas. I mean, you could go into a Quickie Check type of store and buy containered yogurts and stick cheese and fruit if you wanted to. You'll pay a higher price for it, but of course you don't have the means to maybe cart home 6 bags of groceries anyway, so it's only reasonable to purchase what you can carry. And you can use, as I said, the cafeterias on campus to bring back to your room things that you could buy already in a container or a package so that they would carry well and could be stored in the little refrigerator. But yeah, you do have to restock the room, and you have to be careful what you allow your family to send you in the way of care packages. A lot of families have not given up that tradition of baking the best of the homemade cookies and putting together all your brand name favorite treats, Little Miss Debbie brownies or whatever.
Let's not give up the tradition of the homemade cookies, all right?
Well, again, if you have 50 people on a dorm floor and everybody gets a care package and everybody shares it, you're eating a lot of cookies.
Yeah,
if it only happens once a year right before finals, you might be able to enjoy it without any reservations. But it's happening so frequently, and it's always this shared eating experience. So this, again, is where some moderation comes in. You don't have to eat all of them the day they arrived.
You know what I think? Mark actually, in a way, sort of perversely took your advice of not eating all the cookies the day they arrived. He had younger sisters in college. If you were still in college, you would write a chapter on Mark. And like,
oh.
And there would be a circle around it and a line through it. And because Mark had younger sisters who were Girl Scouts, and so what he would do is he would buy cases of Girl Scout cookies. And at Girl Scout cookies time, they sort of flood the campus. But about a month later, they dry up.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark would, in his dorm room where he was a preceptor, have five cases of Girl Scout cookies that he would sell at a premium.
Oh, I never sold them at a premium, you jerk.
I hope he earned a badge for that.
People,
I certainly think he's entitled to some merit.
His sisters did, but people would knock on his window at 2 o'clock in the morning and be like, you got any cookies?
I need some Thin Mints, man, bad.
All right, so you talk about another topic in your book, which I think is very interesting. You call it the free food phenomenon.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us about that?
Well, typical of any situation where it's all you can eat, people don't know what their boundaries are, and they like the idea of having all you can have. So many of the young women I spoke to never had unlimited access to a soft-serve frozen yogurt machine before. And even though it's frozen yogurt, it still has calories.
Right, 4 pounds of it is still too much.
Right, and they would go up there and refill that bowl and really get off on the idea they could have all they want, and there wasn't this parental eye watching them that kind of helped keep them in check at home. And everyone else around them was doing it, so there was really no sense that you had to curb yourself by some kind of group or peer pressure.
And there's also this notion in our society, it's the supersized notion of, you know, it's already paid for, so it's almost like a waste to not eat it. I mean,
that's right.
And that's a hard thing to battle, to overcome that.
Absolutely. The sort of expectation or perception of what is a serving of breakfast cereal is so distorted that if you actually put a 1-cup portion of Fruit Loops in front of somebody, they'd laugh, because people have been eating their Fruit Loops out of mixing bowls for so long.
I was just about to say, a guy I knew in high school who was on a wrestling team and used to have to fast for periods of time, when he would actually eat, he would use a salad bowl, like the salad bowl that you make the salad in, not the salad bowl you serve the salad in order to have a cereal.
Yeah. And that's true of so many things, even pasta, which is available often in these cafeteria lines where you can serve yourself and have all you want. What's a cup of pasta? I mean, that's barely a side dish to people, and they will fill their bowls with much, much larger quantities than they need or that would be considered reasonable. But again, they don't know what a standard serving is, and they certainly are excited by the idea they can have all they want.
You know, Robin, we need to talk about liquids. So,
this is a serious topic. Fighting the Freshman 15. Robin Flips is our guest. We'll be talking more with her in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't, based on lighting. Lights on 9 is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on 9 supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on 9 has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on 9, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is Robin Flips. Her book is Fighting the Freshman 15, and we're talking about the Freshman 15 that often college women pick up in that freshman year right before Thanksgiving.
So, Robin, one of the areas of your book is you talk about liquids.
Yes.
Now, I remember liquids getting me in a lot of trouble in college for lots of different reasons. I remember, maybe overindulging in certain liquids during the course of the evening. And that would cause a twofold problem for me. It wouldn't just give me bad judgment necessarily with whom I was choosing to dance. It would give me bad judgment with
time you danced with Bob, it was pretty
with
bad.
With the food choices that I would make at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. If you have bad judgment, you have bad judgment.
Of course. And that is clearly one of the downsides of having too much alcohol to drink, is that your discretion drops and you can definitely dance with the wrong person.
And then
you can
cheeseburger looks good, yeah.
Yeah. So you may start out with good intentions when you enter a party or a drinking situation, but you are pretty much going to give up most of your self-control.
Go out with a beefcake and have a cheeseburger.
Once you're unable to drive, you're also unable to, you know, make good decisions while eating. So that's a double problem. But you don't have to be using alcohol to get in trouble with liquids, as I explain. And this is really different on campuses today. I would have to believe that certainly up until the past few years, the only thing kids drank on campus were the soft drinks in the cafeteria or in their dorm rooms, and the alcohol at parties. But now there are coffee shops with all of those very fancy cold and hot coffee drinks made with syrups and whipped cream.
Yeah, the Frappuccino should be called the Fattuccino.
Well,
right.
I think frankly adults don't realize either when you go to one of those coffee shops and you have the big old mocha cappuccino culotte thing, that you're having a milkshake.
400
oh, yeah.
calories is what you're having.
Oh, yeah. They are very, very high caloric, and we do not have the same feeling of satiety or fullness after we drink beverages that we might have after we've eaten those same calories as solid foods that you might have to chew a little bit.
Right, so you can drink a third of your caloric daily caloric intake and think to yourself, oh, I just had a cup of coffee.
Exactly.
But it wasn't just a cup of coffee. It was a cup of sugar with coffee in it.
Well, we all know people who, again, adults, college or not, who in their 6 or 7 or 8 sodas a day,
mm-hmm.
take in 1,200, 1,500 calories a day in
right.
soda.
Mm-hmm. You get to have that and a half a hot dog, and that's your caloric intake for the day. You know, this brings us to another topic which you deal with in the book that I think, you know, I have a niece with whom I'm very close. My niece Riley has just gone off to the University of Delaware, and hopefully she listens on podcast. If not, she's in trouble at Thanksgiving. There are gender differences in eating that become apparent in college when you start hanging out and in eating with people of different genders that aren't in your family that you deal with in the book. Why don't you talk to us about that? Because I think that a lot of young women maybe don't realize that and get themselves into trouble trying to keep up.
Well, the big differences are that most guys will eat anything, and they're not measuring it, weighing it, or calculating grams of fat. They tend to be a lot more, you know, just driven by how hungry am I and how free is the food.
And the consequences are less to men for doing that.
Well, they have been in the past. Again, we discussed earlier that there are a lot more social pressures on males' appearances, and they are trying to define their muscles and get, you know, the look of some of the popular celebrities today. So they are feeling some pressure, but in truth, they arrive with less history of dieting. They haven't spent all of their high school years worrying about grams of fat or grams of carbs, and so they tend to just eat very robustly. And if women are hanging out with guys, which is probably what's new, there's a lot of gal and guy pals, not just the dating,
right.
you know, romantic relationship. So if everybody's hanging out and the guys are eating, you know, hot dogs and burgers and pizza with cheese, and the girls want to be part of that, they're going to be in for much higher calorie things than they might have if they were surrounded by girlfriends who are all at least going to complain out loud about the food and the calories, whereas the guys eat it and enjoy it.
Sure, if you're in a co-ed dorm and the pizza arrives at 2 o'clock,
sure.
you know, people are going to eat it.
Sure, and it's simply a difference in whether you want to fit in and get along or whether you're going to be that person who hangs back and isn't going to have a chance to be a full participant, which is very risky socially.
Absolutely.
That's the hard thing.
And the other thing is a guy who weighs 175 pounds is going to have 2 or 3 slices of pizza.
Right.
And, you know, may go up for a short jog and get rid of that in the morning. If
right.
If you're a woman who has a woman's metabolism and you're 115 pounds and you have 2 slices of pizza, it has different implications.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yes. Height alone gives men an advantage in terms of daily caloric requirements or allowance. And then they do have a higher muscle mass, which affects metabolism to their advantage. And they may be able to get out and do several, you know, things to just burn a lot of calories. It's not formal in a gym, but they'll play some one-on-one basketball or they'll play some touch football.
And women are less likely to do that.
They just get out there, and they're having fun when they do it. Women tend to think, oh, my God, I have to go to the gym and do some kind of a formal exercise regimen to
We only have less than a minute left, but let me just ask you, is this problem getting worse or better?
It is getting worse because it follows the trends of society at large, which is we're all getting bigger. People are eating much more than they burn up, and that is going to be true in college as well as when they graduate. And the book does talk about the fact that the sooner you can rein in your eating habits, establish some kind of regular eating and exercise routines, you will have that advantage with you when you leave college because life is still very full of turmoil.
We have to leave it there, Robin. Robin Flips's book is Fighting the Freshman 15, A College Woman's Guide to Getting Real About the Food and Keeping the Pounds Off. We'll tell you how to find that book on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. Robin, thanks for joining us on the show today.
You're welcome.
You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to Mark and Francis, The Restaurant Guys, stage left in Cafe Lombardi restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. You know, The Freshman 15, Mark, is a book that Robin Flips has written, and we both turned 41, I think we should write a book called The 40-40.
You know, Francis, first semester freshman year, I got more pounds than I got credits.
And that includes the classes that you didn't pass.
I passed all my classes, sadly. If I hadn't, it would have been a little better, maybe.
You know, I have to say, I remember one of the great memories in college is of you coming back to my house many times late at night in my senior year and my super senior year.
Well, we had the double whammy.
I did two senior years.
We had the double whammy of being college students, and then midway through college, we got into the restaurant business.
And we both love food.
So, you know, you ate your last meal at 4 or 5 o'clock at night, and now it's 3 o'clock in the morning.
And you worked until midnight and drank until 2. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, what we would do back then, what I would do with my roommate at the time was Kurt, our mutual friend Kurt. Mm-hmm. Kurt Wenzel, famous novelist.
Wrote a great book called Lit Life.
And another book coming out soon. We'll have him on the show to talk about that. But what we used to do is that last call was approaching in the bar, we would troll for our friends in the various dance clubs of New Brunswick and be like, steak at my house, and we would go back to where Kurt and I shared a house and had a full kitchen.
And we would reassemble at Francis's house at 3 o'clock in the morning.
And we would make steak au poivre and a cognac cream sauce with a Caesar salad and open some good beer and wine, and we would finish up about 6:30 in the morning. And I'm sure that Robin Flips would have an aneurysm because we would try and invite as many freshman girls as we could. But that was, I tell you, for two 21-year-old guys, we were cooking some gourmet meals at 5 o'clock in the morning.
I mean, I also remember same time period, Jennifer, who is my wife now.
Oh, yeah, she was a freshman, wasn't she?
Well, a little bit later on, but she started working in retail. Uh-huh. So she would sometimes be going to work at 7 o'clock in the morning. So I'd come home after having steak au poivre with you and have breakfast with Jennifer.
I just remember the end of the day as people would be filing out of my house, all going home. Good night, the sun would be clean up.
Yep.
And I'd be sitting in the backyard smoking my after-dinner cigar.
Can you imagine being one of your neighbors? He's smoking a cigar at 6:30 in the morning. What's wrong with him?
Oh, Lord. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this hour of silliness while Mark and I reminisce about our college careers while we talk about Robin Flips' book, Fighting the Freshman 15. This is really a good book if you've got a young lady going off to college. You can find out how to get it on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. Hope you've enjoyed the hour. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.